book genres are so 20th century. No, 19th century. They made sense when each book needed to be placed on a physical shelf so people could find similar titles. But what if you want to find a vampire romance, a post-apocalyptic comedy, a Western mystery where the main character is an android, a World War II adventure with magic, or a story based around a character of any race or religion or gender, set in any time or any place you choose? Scribble now brings searching for books into the 21st century, even if you're looking for one set in the 17th. Find the books you'll love by selecting the story elements that matter to you at scribble.com. You'll never look for books the same way again. Search by story elements, only at scribble.com. That's scribble.com.
Previously on the Chameleon Chronicles, Andrew had survived Jason's deadly attack by unconsciously changing the texture of his skin to bulletproof metal. Mr. Spiker caught Andrew and his friends on the football field skipping class. He told the teenagers to meet him in his office after lunch for his or her punishment. Andrew and Horseradish searched the school for Angela Crane and found her crying in the auditorium. Happy to see Andrew alive, she gives him a big hug. Suddenly, the auditorium lights go dark, and a voice warns they only have seconds until a bomb explodes. Welcome, I'm Andrew S. Leiter. You're listening to the Chameleon Chronicles Colors of Fate, created and written by Andrew S. Leiter, and cover illustrated by Marcelo Marola. The Chameleon Chronicles was written for teenagers and adults. Some material may be inappropriate for children under age 13. You can purchase copies of the Chameleon Chronicles books at Amazon.com or your local bookstore. For more information about the Chameleon Chronicles, please visit the official website at www.chameleonchronicles.com. And now, Chapter 4. And now, Chapter 4. A bomb! Horseradish panicked. We have to get out of here. Horseradish jumped off the wooden stage and dashed into the darkness. He made a beeline for the exit. He was about two rows from the stage when he stumbled into the auditorium chairs. The tough football player fell to the ground and cradled his bruised knee. In the same instant, Andrew morphed his skin into Kevlar. He grabbed Angela around the waist and dove off the stage. As soon as the couple hit the ground, Andrew threw his body on top of hers to protect her from the blast. The lights turned on as the counter hit 1 second. The bomb exploded when the count displayed double zeros. Confetti spewed out of the black box. The trio was showered with streamers and glitter. Before she could notice, Andrew morphed his skin back to normal. Angela, wrapping her arms around Andrew, pulled him close and planted a big kiss on his lips. Andrew broke off the kiss by pushing himself off of Angela. He stood up, wiping his lips on the sleeve of his jacket. "Why do you insist on doing that?" Andrew stared back at her irritably. "You're my hero," Angela answered. "I was just thanking you." "Well, you could have just said it." Andrew reached out his hand to pull Angela to her feet. "I wanted to be more friendly," Angela explained, accepting his hand and standing up. She brushed off the seat of her pants. "I like action more than words." "If your tongue gets any friendlier with my throat, I'm going to have to consider it a second Adam's apple," Andrew replied. "This is heaven?" Horseradish stumbled into a standing position. His knee throbbed from the pain of running into the auditorium seat. "It looks just like the school auditorium. I guess we're supposed to wait here for God's almighty speech at the end of time. Or maybe this is the waiting room for heaven, just like the go motion ride at the amusement park. We have to wait here until the room fills before we can go to heaven." "We're not dead, you moron," Andrew explained, running his hands through his hair in frustration. "The bomb was a fake." Well, that might explain why my knee still hurts, Horseradish commented. After scraping as much of the glitter off his clothes as he could, Andrew climbed back up onto the stage. Examining the black box, Andrew discovered a note written in dripping red ink. It read, "I know who you are." Andrew snatched the note and held it up into the air. "Very funny, Van Zant, but this is not a game. When I find where you're hiding, you're going to have a serious talk with my fist." The teenagers split up to search for their adversary. Andrew searched the backstage for Jason Van Zant, but could find no trace of him. Angela searched down every row while Horseradish checked the balcony. Jason Van Zant could not be found. Finally, they decided to give up the search. "He must be long gone by now," Horseradish sighed, slumping down in a seat. Andrew plopped down in the seat next to Horseradish. Before Andrew could object, Angela planted herself in his lap. Andrew didn't argue this time. His mind was drifting through the possibilities of Jason Van Zant's latest action. What was he up to? What did the note mean? Did it mean that Jason knew about Andrew's magical powers? Visions of Bethany's face cleared Andrew's mind of questions about Jason Van Zant. He pictured the look on her face when she had noticed him staring at her in the hallway. He pondered the possibilities of what had been racing through her mind at that moment. Had she felt the same attraction that he had? Or was she just returning a glance of accusation and suspicion? Andrew wrapped his arms around Angela's waist and wished she were Bethany. Angela was ecstatic that Andrew's hands were wrapped around her waist and resting on her stomach. She placed her hand on top of his and began to rub affectionately. A minute later, she asked, "What are you going to do about Jason?" "There's only one thing to do," Andrew revealed. "We're going to have to tell Mr. Spiker about Jason's murder attempt." "Why?" Angela turned around in surprise. "He might try and kill you again if you tell on him." Andrew explained what had happened at the bleachers. Horseradish helped, adding in detail, but both left out the part about Andrew's powers. Andrew revealed the possibility of suspension and what their parents would think of all this. He also pointed out how dangerous to other students it was for Jason to be carrying a deadly weapon. Finally, Angela was persuaded the boys were right. They had a responsibility to tell Mr. Spiker the truth. Jody was ecstatic when the bell rang for lunch. She snatched up her English book and tucked it under her arm. She was sick of hearing about sentence structure. If she had to listen to Mrs. Wanberg for 5 more minutes, Jody would have pulled her hair out. "I don't know which is more boring," Amy Fishman complained, "listening to Mrs. Wanberg or watching grass grow." "I definitely choose watching grass grow," Jody replied. "At least you don't get hand hernia staring at grass." Melody caught up with the girls as they walked down the hall toward their lockers. "Kevin Grayson just asked me to the homecoming dance." "That's wonderful," Jody complimented. Amy got a big grin on her face. "Now we'll have to go shopping at the mall." "What about you two?" Melody asked. "Do you have dates yet?" "Yeah," Jody answered, stopping at her locker to spin the dial. "I'm going with Marcus Leary. He asked me yesterday." "What about you, Amy?" Melody interrogated. "Have you been asked yet?" "Of course I have," Amy retorted. "I've been asked by several boys. I just haven't chosen one yet. I like to make them suffer a little bit." Jody nudged Melody in the side. "I think she's just holding out for Horseradish." Amy glared at Jody. "I knew one of you couldn't go without mentioning him." All three of the girls laughed. The two other girls walked toward their lockers, while Jody turned back toward her locker. With her combination already entered, she pulled the handle, opening the door. Jody's eyes widened as far as they could, and she let out a loud shriek. The other two girls came dashing back to Jody's locker. A dead body of a teenage boy was folded in half and shoved in Jody's locker. A stench even stronger than rotten tuna reeked from the locker. Thousands of maggots swarmed the stiff body. The sight was so horrible that Melody lost her lunch. Holding her nose, Jody quickly grabbed the locker door. She was about to slam it shut when she noticed her little mirror that hung on the door. It had been cracked, but no shards had fallen from it. In red lipstick were written the words, "I know who you are." Andrew rejoiced when Horseradish took off the chicken costume. The boys had stopped at the gym locker rooms so that Horseradish could change out of his chicken costume. Though he had wanted to show it to the lunchroom servers, he didn't want to risk running into Mr. Spiker while he was still wearing the costume. The boys had said goodbye to Angela a few minutes before. They had asked her to join them for lunch in the cafeteria, but but she was not feeling very hungry. Instead, she went into the gymnasium where a television had been set up to watch music videos. She had been in the mood for music and also wanted to talk to some of her other friends. As soon as Horseradish had finished changing into his blue jeans and t-shirts, the boys headed for the cafeteria. Horseradish sweet-talked the serving ladies into giving him extra portions, something that was a daily routine for the hungry football player. Andrew just rolled his eyes as a mound full of mashed potatoes was slopped onto Horseradish's tray. Horseradish rejoiced with delight as a spoonful of beef gravy made a miniature pond in the middle of his mashed potatoes. A huge thank you was given as he received an extra cookie. "If you gain too much weight, Coach Dickerson is going to make you go on a diet," Andrew teased, poking Horseradish in the stomach with his fork. "This is all muscle," Horseradish countered, patting his gut. "Yeah, and so is this," Andrew replied, poking the white fat of his pork chop. Andrew pointed to an empty table. Horseradish planted himself and immediately started devouring his food, even before Andrew had time to set his tray down. Just as Andrew was about to sit down, he noticed a waving hand across the cafeteria. Brian was sitting at a table talking with Vicky Tharp and Bethany Mogg. Without hesitation, Andrew snatched his tray off the table and rushed across the room. Horseradish took another spoonful of mashed potatoes before grabbing his tray and following. Of course, Andrew sat in the open seat next to Bethany. Horseradish, who was trying to eat a piece of meat while at the same time carrying his tray, flopped down next to Andrew. "Hey guys," Brian greeted as the fellow sat down. Andrew responded with the same, while Horseradish responded with a nod of his head. Andrew grabbed a spoonful of mashed potatoes dripping with gravy and shoved them into his mouth. He looked up and saw Brian eyeballing him to ask Bethany to the homecoming dance. Andrew's heart began to race and his sweat glands began to work overtime. He discreetly nodded his head no. "Vicky and I are going to the homecoming dance together," Brian announced. He looked over at Vicky and she smiled cutely back at him. Andrew rolled his eyes. Though Vicky was a pretty girl and a cheerleader, Andrew knew she wasn't really interested in Brian. Most girls weren't. Brian wasn't that great looking. Most girls considered him a nerd. They just liked to date him because his family was wealthy and very well known on the social circuit. "Who are you going with, Bethany?" Brian asked. Andrew just about spit the milk out of his mouth. "I don't know," Bethany replied. "Surprisingly, no one has asked me yet." Brian kicked Andrew underneath the table. Andrew shot him a glance, then turned towards Bethany. His palms suddenly became wet with perspiration, and his heart was racing even faster than before. It took the might of 1,000 men for his mouth to even open. I haven't found a date either yet," Andrew's cotton mouth spat out the words. "If you're interested, I could take you to the dance." "That sounds great," Bethany answered. "Then it's a date," Andrew agreed. He grabbed his milk and drank half the carton, relieving his dried-out throat. "Who are you going to the dance with, Horseradish?" Bethany asked, turning toward the muscular football player. Horseradish stopped dead in his track. He was just about to take his tray back up for seconds. "I'm going with Amy Fishman. She's my girl." "Fat chance of that happening," Amy replied. Amy stood behind Horseradish, holding her tray of food. Jody and Melody were walking up a few steps behind her. "Sweetheart!" Horseradish exclaimed, jumping up and pulling the seat out next to his. "I'm glad you could join us for lunch." Amy sat down in the chair that Horseradish had pulled out for her. "If you call me sweetheart, pumpkin, honey, or anything else like that again, I'll shove this fork where the sun don't shine." "I love it when you talk sexy," Horseradish replied, grabbing his tray off the table. "I'll be back in a minute, Cupcake." "Don't rush," Amy called after him. She picked up her fork and waved it at him with a look of disgust on her face. He didn't see it, though, because he was already halfway up to the lunch line. Bethany and Vicky were finished eating and decided to go watch music videos in the gymnasium. They said their goodbyes and walked toward the lunch tray drop-off. Andrew stared at Bethany while she walked away. He was still in shock with what had just transpired. Jody waved her hand in front of her brother's face, breaking his stare. "Irked to Andrew, I need to talk to you." Andrew listened intently as Jody and Melody described the events of their mysterious notes. Andrew then went on to describe what had happened to him and the others in the auditorium. After a brief discussion, they had decided it would be best to show Mr. Spiker what had transpired in the last several hours. Soon after the bell rang, signaling the end of lunch, the group, including Angela, gathered in Mr. Spiker's office. They described the events that had transpired that day, leaving out the parts about their magic powers. Mr. Spiker leaned back in his black leather chair, not speaking a word. He rubbed his clean-shaven chin as one by one the teenagers described their part in the story. Finally, Mr. Spiker leaned forward. "That's a wonderful story you have concocted, Mr. Weber. I bet coming up with it was the highlight of your lunch." "What do you mean, concocted?" Andrew blurted out. "That whole story was true." Mr. Spiker stood up and looked Andrew straight in the eye. "Mr. Weber, it is impossible for Jason Van Zandt to attempt to kill you. He was in a motorcycle accident last night and has been laid up in the hospital. He has been in a coma for the last 12 hours. Next time on the Chameleon Chronicles. Andrew tries to prove to Mr. Spiker that Jason is behind the pranks. Horseradish finds a clue, and Andrew gets married.